This is the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper for May the 3rd, 2024. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending May the 3rd, 2024. Reading today are Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I am Noel Thorpe Tracy. The headlines today are MP says losing training site would be travesty, former mayor tried to murder his mum, and Cathedral's director of music to stand down. So, may we have the first headline, please, Heather.
MP says losing training site would be a travesty. Winchester and Chandlesford MP Steve Bryan spoke in favour of retaining the Sir John Moore Barracks when he paid a visit to the Army Training Regiment. Mr Bryan performed the role of inspecting officer for a group of new recruits passing out at the end of the 13-week course to begin their career in the British Army. ATR Winchester, based at the Sir John Moore Barracks in Andover Road, hosts basic training where civilians are transformed into soldiers. They then move on to the next stage of their training. Mr Bryan, who was hosted by Commanding Officer Lieutenant Colonel Jim Phipps, saw some of the facilities on the site before inspecting the recruits and giving the main address at the parade ground. Around 500 visitors were there, including friends and family of the recruits. Mr Bryan said, "Just talking to the young men and women at ATR Winchester is a reminder of the strong sense of service they have, many of them following in the footsteps of family members, but also how they are regular people, about to do remarkable things to keep us safe. Many congratulations to all who graduated in this cohort, and good luck with your Phase 2 training." After his visit, the MP spoke out forcefully against the sale of the barracks as planned by the Ministry of Defence under its Future Soldier programme. That's due to happen in 2026, as things stand. The barracks was only opened in 1986. Mr Bryan said, "It's no secret, I think it would be a travesty to lose this facility to the Army and to Winchester. It's a valued MOD site because of its green open space setting, but also because it's a relatively modern base. I understand Purbright is the place where all this training will go in the future, but remain far from convinced it has the space to expand should we need to scale up the size of our army. We live in a more uncertain world than even a few years ago. There exists an axis of authoritarian states in the worlds of the Prime Minister, so I think it would be absolute folly to lose ATR Winchester. Once it's gone, it's gone. And while I appreciate that would have implications for Winchester in terms of future housing, it's better to face that now and make other plans given the reality of geopolitics today. I shall go on making this point." The MP added his voice to calls for defence spending to rise above NATO's 2% of GDP target to 2.5%. An open day for residents is being held at the barracks on Saturday, May the 4th. The Defence Infrastructure Organisation is seeking feedback to its plans for disposal. The site is being earmarked for housing, and Liberal Democrat parliamentary candidate Danny Chambers recently proposed it be the site of the new hospital proposed by the Hampshire Hospital Trust.
Thank you. Now, John.
Former mayor tried to murder his mum. A former mayor of Winchester attempted to murder his dying mother by smothering her with a cushion. David McLean, 72, is alleged to have tried to kill Margaret McLean, 92, because he could not bear to see her suffering, a court heard. McLean later told police that as he did so, he said, "I'm sorry, Mum." He was on a bedside vigil for his bedbound mother, who had been diagnosed with COVID and pneumonia a couple of days earlier at her home in Chase Grove, Waltham Chase, near Bishop's Waltham. After he thought he had succeeded, McLean rang the NHS helpline 111 to admit what he had done, and also confessed to the police after his arrest shortly after. Opening the case, Jodie Mattel, prosecuting, said, "This is in any view a sad case. The defendant is an upstanding member of the community, someone of impeccable good character, a former mayor of Winchester." Ms. Mattel added, "On the evening of October the 6th, 2022, Mr. McLean, for reasons you may have some sympathy with, tried to end his elderly mother's life. His mother, Margaret, was 92 years old, and she was dying. She was on end-of-life care, and he was at her bedside vigil. Suddenly, Mr. McLean tried to speed up his mother's demise using a pillow, and he attempted to smother her. Ms. Mattel said Mrs. McLean did die at or around the time of her son's actions. She said McLean called NHS 111 and spoke to an operator. Ms. Mattel said, having provided his mother's details, he said he had never set out to kill her, but that his mum was dead. He explained to the operator she was 92 and she was dying, and, quote, I helped her. I had to kill her. I had to. She was suffocating on her own snot. I put a cushion over her face. I had to do it to stop her suffering. The police were called shortly after midnight on October the 7th, and McLean was arrested on suspicion of murder. In interview, he told police he had just had COVID and drank two or three small glasses of whiskey, but did not believe either contributed to his actions. Ms. Mattel added, he said he had seen a couple of people die. He heard the death rattle, and I just decided to send her off, he said. I couldn't live with myself standing there watching her drown. I can't remember where the cushion came from. I just remember putting it over her face. I said, I'm sorry, Mum. I couldn't stand the pain. McLean of Morley Drive, Bishop's Waltham, who served as Mayor of Winchester in 2017 to 18 and as a city councillor for Bishop's Waltham until May 23, denies attempted murder. The judge, Mrs. Justice McGowan, told the jury that by coincidence the House of Commons was that day debating assisted dying, but added, that is not what this case is about, and it is a remarkable coincidence that the two things have happened on the same day. It has no bearing on this case. The trial, before a jury of 8 men and 4 women, is expected to last at least 2 weeks. On the second day of the trial, at Winchester Crown Court, the jury was shown body-worn footage recorded by police at Mrs. McLean's home soon after the alleged assault. In the video clip shown to the jury, McLean said, "My mother is dead. She's been dying for the last 2 weeks. She was drowning in her own snot." Speaking to Mr. McLean, PC Philip Lindsay said, "We are concerned with the call you made to 111. McLean said, "I passed my mother into the next world with a cushion on her face. I had to choose, but I accept what I did. I'm sorry." The trial continues.
And lastly, Jane, please.
Here we have Cathedral's Director of Music to stand down. The Director of Music at Winchester Cathedral has announced he will stand down after 22 years. Dr. Andrew Lumsden will leave the position on July the 31st. His final services and events will include the summer activities, including the annual liturgy of the Foundation. He will also be presiding over the Southern Cathedrals Festival held at Winchester this year, which will feature the combined choirs of Winchester, Salisbury and Chichester Cathedrals. Dean, the Very Reverend Catherine Ogle, said, "Andy Lumsden has been an outstanding director of music at Winchester Cathedral for over 2 decades.
Throughout this time, his contribution to the world of English choral music and sheer musical excellence has been a daily inspiration to congregations and to all fortunate enough to worship here, including growing numbers of people online. In addition to his choral directorship skills, we should not forget his superlative and seemingly effortless playing of the organ. During his time at Winchester, Andy Lumsden has trained generations of choristers, contributing not only to their musical and personal formation, but also instilling a desire to make worship truly memorable for others. There are many pieces in the cathedral's repertoire that it would be hard to imagine performed in any other way than with the emotional contours shaped by Andy. Andrew, who received an honorary doctorate from the University of Winchester in 2023, said, "It has been a real honor for me to work here for the past 22 years, and a privilege to work with some wonderful people, not least my fellow organists, the lay clerks, and the amazing boy and girl choristers. I'm also very grateful to the Wainfleet Singers for giving me the opportunity to conduct some of the larger scale choral works. There are too many highlights for me, but one that keeps coming back was the funeral of Sir John Taverner in 2013. The combination of Greek Orthodox liturgy and our own service was breathtaking in its beauty. As the then Dean James Atwell wrote at the time, earth touched heaven. Thank you to one and all for your support and good luck with whatever the future brings." And this is accompanied by a picture of a very cheerful-looking Andrew Lumsden, who is wearing his red and purple cloak with one of the black flat hats on his head, being presented with an honorary doctorate by a gentleman in a purple and yellow gold-embroidered coat with also the black hat on his head.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines for this week. If you know someone else who is sight impaired and would like to receive our free recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. That's 01962 861 229. This number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. So, now we will proceed with the death notices, Christian comment, letters to the editor, Belgarum, first person and editorial comment. And then we will continue with items of general news. So, here are the death notices. Borkut, Marie Winifred Borkut, peacefully on the 23rd of April 2024, aged 88. Field, Janice Ann Field, passed away peacefully on the 15th of April 2024, aged 90. Gibbons, KC, Jeremy Gibbons, KC, at Winchester Hospice. Gilmore, Sylvia Jill, née White, Sylvia Jill Gilmore, sadly passed away peacefully at Winchester Hospice on 11th of April 2024, aged 89. Noah, Delvin Clarence Noah, the Reverend Delvin Noah, on April 15th, 2024. Lanfear, George William Thomas Lanfear, William Bill, passed away peacefully on Friday the 12th of April 2024, aged 88. Lyndon Moore, Nigel Lyndon Moore, on April the 11th, aged 73. McManus, Peter McManus, on the 18th of April 2024, after a short illness. McMaster, Maureen McMaster, peacefully on the 17th of April 2024, at Winchester Hospice. Miles Morris, Morris Miles, passed away peacefully on the 16th of April 2024, aged 84. Taylor, Robert or Bob Taylor, after a long and eventful life on the 21st of April 2024, aged 98 years. White, John Bernard White, on 21st of March 2024. Whitman, Mazel. Mazel Whitman passed away peacefully at home on the 9th of April 2024, aged 92. So, Christian comment this week is written by the Reverend Thomas Wharton, Vicar of Romsey Abbey and St Swithin's Crampmoor, and it's read by Heather.
Nature and humans thriving together. Since 2021, peregrine falcons have been teasing us at the Abbey by making us think they are nesting, when in fact they are not. Judging by the number of visitors in the South Garth with telescopic cameras pointed at the bell tower, this year's pair seem to have chosen the Abbey as their home. Many cathedrals and churches now have peregrines nesting, and it seems conservation efforts are bearing fruit. In fact, not only peregrine falcons, but the sight of a red kite is now very common, when only recently they were confined to a few areas in the British Isles, and Fish Lake Meadows host ospreys and a vast array of wildlife. I recently saw and heard a pair of otters swimming and calling each other by the causeway. A closer look around the Abbey and its grounds, and you notice all kinds of wildlife making a home. A beehive in a wall cavity, the north churchyard gradually becoming a wildflower meadow, a bug home teeming with creepy crawlies. John Donne famously wrote, "No man is an island entire of itself. Every man is a piece of the continent, a part of the main." When you look at nature, you can't help but agree with John Donne. We don't exist on our own. We have a delicate and codependent relationship with the environment around us that needs careful attention and stewardship in order to coexist and thrive. I'm excited that peregrines may have chosen to nest at the Abbey. I'm also aware of the need to welcome them in a way that enables our bell-ringing community to continue to make their valuable contribution to the Abbey and the town. We might think that as individuals and as church communities, we can only make a small difference when you look at the environmental challenges the world faces. But that small difference can make such an impact, while at the same time bringing incredible fulfilment and delight when we see both nature and humans thriving together. A dismissal prayer used at harvest sums this up well. Tend the earth. Care for God's good creation, and bring forth the fruits of righteousness. Go in the peace of Christ. Thanks be to God. The Reverend Thomas Wharton.
There are 11 letters this week, beginning with one read by John.
Thank you. And this first one is entitled Choosing the Wrong Route. I beg your pardon, route. And it's by Tony Atherton. It is sad, though perhaps not unexpected, that nobody in an official position has responded, as yet, to my and others' requests for an explanation as to why it is a good idea to close Andover Road and divert traffic through the new King's Barton estate. However, on the local election leaflets now coming through my door, I note that at least one would-be councillor, Antonia Cox, Conservative, says that she is, quote, concerned about the impact of the Andover Road North closure, unquote. I may have missed others' concerns. Antonia, concern is great, but can you tell us what you will actually be able to do about it? If diverting a main road directly through a housing estate is such a great idea, can we look forward to this policy being extended to other main roads leading into Winchester? The longer journeys will ensure even more pollution from petrol and diesel fumes. Except that's not what we want, is it? That letter is from Tony Atherton, Rulands Drive, Littleton, Winchester.
And Nick Dennis writes, inspiring ballet performance. My wife and I were blown away by the performance of York Dance Project at the Theatre Royal on April the 23rd. It was not ballet as a pretty spectacle, but an inspiring demonstration by a small touring company of excellent dancers of the use of dance to explore complex human experiences and emotions. We felt very lucky to have this a few minutes' walk from our house. Thank you, Theatre Royal. The very enthusiastic audience, however, comprised only about a quarter of the theatre's capacity, and very few appeared to be below the age of 30. Winchester has its own university, plus a sizeable segment of Southampton's, and a large sixth form college. Surely many of their students are interested in theatre, music, dance and drama, and many of them must be considering careers by these areas. They could have learned a great deal about artistic commitment and integrity from this show. The Theatre Royal tries hard with its publicity, but perhaps a line of communication with the local colleges could achieve more, so that more teachers could say to their interested students, "Oh, this is something you should really try to see." That was from Nick Dennis, Worthy Lane, Hyde in Winchester.
Charlie Wilson of Barfield Close returns to a theme of his earlier letter in the Chronicle on April the 18th. I note the Liberal Democrats were very quick to respond to my letter about Danny Chambers and the comments he made on Twitter some years ago in the comments section of the online paper. One of the most common lines from the Liberal Democrats is that the comments he made were a joke from a BBC television show, which may be an easy justification to make for our tired Liberal Democrat friends. However, as the wise people at the British Dyslexia Association pointed out, he was making a comment to impress people at the expense of others. Unbecoming for someone who wishes to stand for Parliament, he should know better. Is this the official message the Winchester Liberal Democrats want to send to the 870,000 school children with dyslexia, that it's just a joke? Hampshire's children are thriving due to the hard work of Hampshire County Council teaching staff across the region, with this paper reporting a rise in the Times Table test scores. Danny Chambers should acknowledge this, but he would rather talk down the hard work of teaching staff to score a few easy political points. The Liberal Democrats' policies will do little to nothing for the most disadvantaged children. In fact, they benefit the wealthiest through the rollout of free school meals for the children of millionaires. The Lib Dems even have a drafted motion template for their copy and paste councillors to use. Charlie Wilson, Barfield Close, Bar End, Winchester.
Question for Commissioner, writes Nick Ray. I'd like to ask Hampshire Police and Crime Commissioner, that's the PCC, Donna Jones, what she means about 20,000 extra police delivered, as per the highly political, partisan, misleading and expensive-looking flyer that's just plopped through my door in Winchester. As Chronicle readers will know, these extra officers simply replace the 21,000 police officers that the Tories cut between March 2010 and March 2018, along with selling off police stations which have not been replaced, ignoring admin staff losses too. Unfortunately, my efforts to ask the Commissioner have been rebuffed. Jones has blocked me on Twitter, now called X, even though her account is marked as an official PCC one. She has also declined to respond to my letters to her at PCC and other inquiries, including open letters via the Chronicle. Yet, this Conservative supporting holder of this £89,000 per annum post still finds time to appear on conspiracy-fomenting Ofcom-censored news channel GB News, whilst ignoring voices such as mine, as well as the manifold crime problem she has reigned over. Perhaps, like me, your readers should consider carefully not just the councillors they want to elect locally on May the 2nd, but also on the same date whether Hampshire residents should vote with their feet and let Commissioner Jones know that it's time for her to get on her bike and go. That's from Nick Ray, Fordington Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester.
And Simon Lever writes, theft of church lead was awful. The theft of lead from St Mark's Church is awful, and not the first time churches have been targeted, Chronicle, April the 25th. The Church of England Parish Church of St Mary in Thenford, built around 1200, is the church where my son and daughter-in-law were married. Thenford is around 5 miles north of Brackley. The lead was also stripped from this beautiful church around 3 or 4 years ago. Such sadness, because lead can never really be replaced, forming an integral part of such beautiful structures. Having to consider CCTV is terribly sad, but churches with lead roofs are open to such criminality. Let us hope and pray the perpetrators will be found and charged, such vandalism for pure profit. And that was from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
Robert Parsons writes to cheer us up a bit. Passport service wins praise. We so often hear of delays and disappointing service that I thought you would like to read a really good story. I applied for a British passport renewal last week, standard service, and received it in the post today. It took just 5 working days. Must be a record. Well done to the post office. Robert Parsons, Stony Lane, Week, Winchester.
This letter is from Beth Roberts, School of Literature and Languages at the University of Surrey. And it's entitled Contest Spotlight on Cultural Lives. The University of Surrey's School of Literature and Languages is excited to announce that we have just launched the Surrey Cultural Lives competition. This competition is open to everyone and asks for a 500-word entry to the Surrey Cultural Lives map about someone who has shaped Surrey's cultural heritage and or history. Some examples may be Lewis Carroll or George Abbott. But we encourage people to look for other people who may be underrepresented or with whom you may have a personal connection. You can access the Surrey Cultural Lives map at, and this is where I need to read out a website, surreyculturallives.org. That's surreyculturallives.org, where you will be able to see some of the 500 word descriptions that are already public. You will need to submit your 500 word entry to, and this is an email address, sorry about this, sllresearch@surrey.ac.uk. I've got to read that again. It's sllresearch, that's all one word, at surrey.ac.uk. And the entry must be submitted by midnight on Friday, June the 14th. First place will win £250, and there are two £100 awards for second and third place. We also launched the Surrey Cultural Lives podcast on April the 22nd, where you can listen to academics from the University of Surrey discuss their entries. It's available to listen to on YouTube. We look forward to reading your submissions. That's from Beth Roberts, School of Literature and Languages, University of Surrey, Guildford, Surrey.
And Tim Loudon writes, Treasure of an Organist. On Thursday, February the 16th, 2023, you published my letter, headed Draconian Step, in which I express my horror on reading that Winchester Cathedral will no longer allow concerts on Saturday evenings. Who takes those kind of decisions? In the fourth paragraph, I wrote, I have been kept reasonably in touch with cathedral affairs as an ex-chorister over the years, and I have to say the news became gradually worse as time went on. The cathedral has, up until today, in residence one of the finest organists in the UK, Andrew Lumsden, whose accommodation has been downgraded to a dwelling unsuitable for his position. Are we about to lose him? No answer was forthcoming. I presume, therefore, that whoever made this suggestion in the first place had no sense of the importance of the role of director of music in a cathedral, but even worse, allowing this blunder to become public knowledge, thereby implicating the dean and chapter, was irresponsible. To even contemplate putting this treasure of an organist into such accommodation, not large enough to take his piano, was beyond belief. Therefore, I can only assume that back in February 2023, something was stirring after all and has just come to a head. Back in 2023, I asked, what is the cause of this threat to our great heritage of cathedral music? I think I deserve to know a little more now. And that was from Tim Loudon, Stockbridge Road, Sutton Scotney.
Peter Lamb writes about building on chalk downland. In reference to your many articles on building new housing estates and hospitals on greenfield sites, may I point out that Britain possesses 85% of the world's chalk downland, and a good proportion of that is in Hampshire. These new building sites require great swathes of land, as well as land for supporting infrastructure such as new surgeries, schools, water treatment plants, sewage works, power supplies, and the connections. In Hampshire, this often means building on chalk downland, which also has a detrimental effect on chalk rivers and streams, an aspect in which Hampshire is preeminent. A month does not go by without someone proposing to build on greenfield chalk downland for the benefit of all. Of course, the owners of said land would never think of profit. While I applaud those that wish to buy chalk downland, I do question whether this is for profit or preserving the world's ecological future. Peter Lamb, Northington, Alsford.
Concern about election literature, writes Stephen Percy. I echo your correspondent Peter Lydiard's concern in last week's letters page about misleading Conservative Party election literature. One such that I received, called Winchester Future, was covered in Labour Party red ink, but made many references to Flick Drummond, describing her as our local MP. This is not true. She is the sitting MP for Meon Valley and the recently rejected applicant for the redrawn Fareham constituency, having been well beaten by Suella Braverman. She was subsequently adopted by Winchester Conservatives as their candidate for the forthcoming general election without a proper contest. That letter is from Stephen Percy, Eastern Winchester.
And Roger Chatterton Newman writes, Family History Behind Monument. While I am delighted to see that conservation work is underway on the Farley Mount Monument, I feel that I should point out an error in your report on April the 25th. Sir Paulette St. John, that could be Sir Paulet St. John, I'm not sure, 1704-80, who commissioned the monument, was not the third Earl of Bolingbroke, and indeed no such person existed. The St. John family had owned Farley since the late 16th century, and the Bolingbroke Viscountcy, not earldom, was created in 1712 for a junior branch of the family seated at Lydia Tregose, Wiltshire. Sir Paulette, was thus their distant cousin. He was a son of Ellis Mews, himself maternally a St. John, who assumed that surname in 1699 when he married his cousin Frances St. John, heiress of Farley. Ellis's second wife, Martha Goodyear, mother of Paulette, was also an heiress, in her case, of Dogmersfield Park near Winchfield, which Paulette was to rebuild as his family seat. Created a baronet in 1772, Sir Paulette was MP for Winchester from 1734 to 41, for Hampshire 1741 to 7, and again for Winchester from 1751 to 4. High Sheriff of Hampshire in 1764, he was also Mayor of Winchester in 1772-3. And that was from Roger Chatterton Newman, Stretton's Copse, Milland Lipbook, and does, of course, include a photograph of the Farley Mount Monument, which looks a bit like, if you haven't seen it before, looks a bit like a very, very small church with a pointed tower and is currently surrounded by scaffolding, sitting on the little lump at the top of that wonderful Farley Mount area.
Thanks to all our correspondents. You can contact the Hampshire Chronicle anytime by writing to 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO238AL, or by phone on 01962 860836. That's 01962 860836. Now, as Belgarum, an alternative look at the news.
Belgarum has one thing to say this week, and it's about the reality of pothole repairs. And he's discussing three pictures which he's had put into the Chronicle. The first one is one that Hampshire Highways used on social media to show a pothole repair. And it shows a crisply laid repair with the edge protected by a sealant. And it's an example of what the County Council would like to show off. The other two photos show the widespread reality on the streets of Winchester. And they're two pictures, obviously, of fairly badly mended potholes. Top right is a repair on Milverton Road in full flood that looks thrown together in 30 minutes. The other photo is in St George's Street, close to Belgarum's office. The repair has been lined with a sealant, but the material has started to disintegrate within days, yes, days, of the workmen finishing a few weeks ago. Belgarum asked the County Council about the poor work and what oversight was being done by managers to ensure things were done properly and to a high standard, like the one that they showed in their site. This is their brief reply. We are aware of these issues, and work has already been scheduled to undertake the required repairs in the very near future at no cost to the County Council. Lo and behold, that repair in St George's Street has actually been done. Interesting to see how long it lasts. I've got a thing in this because in my road there's two potholes that reappear every spring, and they're big ones. I'll continue properly, like I should. Belgarum is no highway engineer, but you don't need to be one to know poor quality. Might a suggestion be that the specification of the sealant be improved? There are many street repairs, especially after roadworks, that have been sealed and remain sound years later. It is important, as this sealant prevents access by water. In the winter, that water gets into the join, freezes and expands, acting as a battering ram against the repair. Over time, it destroys the repairs and the cycle continues. If the problem is not the sealant material, then perhaps it is poor quality assurance at the County Council. QA, or quality assurance, aims to get things right first time, and can dispense with the attitude of, oh well, things can be fixed later and more money for us. And this should matter to readers of the Chronicle, because at the end of the day, you are footing the bill. Councillor reader Rob Humby, can you ensure Hampshire Highways gets the repairs right first time? Belgarum.
Now John will read this week's first person, which is by George Hayter.
And this week it's entitled Hills, the Secret of Life. Wherever it is you want to go in Winchester, getting there nearly always seems to involve plodding up a ghastly steep hill. If your Winchester destination is one of the few that doesn't involve walking up a hill, it'll probably involve walking down one. And that just means you postpone your uphill slog till the return journey. Winchester's exhausting topography may put you off walking anywhere. Who wants to get tired legs and sweaty trainers just strolling round the block. It's all very well saying there are great views to be had from St. Catherine's Hill and St. Giles Hill, but as all Winchester residents all know, a foolhardy expedition to such places will inevitably lead to exhaustion. There is a brute of a hill on the west side of Winchester, up through Stanmore and Badger Farm to Oliver's Battery. I would guess that people living in Oliver's Battery occupy the highest part of Winchester, and I reckon they reside about 100 metres above the lowest part, which is down by the River Itchen. If any OB residents are nimble enough to tackle the walk home from the middle of town, they will be doing the equivalent of climbing the stairs of a block of flats about 24 stories high. Hard work if you've got shopping. Living in superflat Amsterdam was the best time of my life. No brute hills there. The steepest thing was an occasional little humpback bridge over a quaint canal. I'm a natural moaner, but even I can see there is a bright side to living in an up and down town like Winchester. In fact, lots of bright sides. I have come round to the view that the hills are one of the best things about Winchester. Hills flatter the place and make it more dramatic. When you look up the High Street, medieval Westgate, the gradient adds interest. The former Peninsula Barracks and Oram's Arbour would be half the spectacle they are if they were on the level, and the look of sweet St. John the Baptist Church wouldn't be half as pretty if it wasn't reached from a steep path up from Water Lane. Hills strengthen Winchester's character. They literally give the place an extra dimension compared to Hampshire's two-dimensional flat towns like Southampton and most of Portsmouth. The ancient Wessex capital sits pretty in a valley where the Itchen flows through a ridge of chalk. The massive ridge, about 30 miles long, runs from Michelmarsh to East Meon and forms part of the west end of the South Downs, whose other end is Beachy Head in Sussex. The effect is a vast chalk cradle protecting Winchester. Flat towns, ringed by flat countryside, sometimes give the impression they were plonked there, while Winchester almost feels like a natural organism nestling in a perfect spot at a fordable water crossing between two well-drained slopes. Views of the historic buildings of Winchester are delightfully framed by the surrounding hills behind them, to the envy of ancient architecture in flatter towns. Hills are one aspect of our town that will never change. Architects, planners and politicians can build over every patch of ground, but nothing they can do will take away Winchester's hills. I think it's safe to say that, although I admit that in the 1990s, builders of the M3 did cart away almost 5 acres of Twyford Down. Recently, I have tried to adopt a healthy attitude towards Winchester's forbidding gradients by accepting them as a challenge. Now I relish steep streets and paths, striding up them at rapid paces. I even run up for short bits. Who cares about aching thighs or sweaty socks when uphill speed keeps you fit and well? The more uphill my lifestyle, the longer I will live, I tell myself. Hilly Winchester enhances your life and can lengthen your life.
And finally, Jane has the editorial comment.
Bus day provides spring highlight. One of the highlights of spring in Winchester is the annual bus running day of the Friends of King Alfred Buses, FOCAB. The assortment of veteran buses return, city streets and country roads resounding to the puttering of old diesel engines and the snort of recalcitrant gearboxes. This year it is on Monday, May the 6th. There is a full page of details of the day on page 20 of this week's edition. The charity was born of fond memories of the King Alfred Bus Company that operated from 1915 to 1973, based in the Broadway. Many older Wintonians will fondly recall taking a King Alfred Bus Company vehicle to get to work or school or meet friends. The company was killed off by the rise in ownership of cars and the OPEC oil crisis that saw the cost of fuel go through the roof. So it is always great to see the buses back, if only for a day. It brings lots of people into the city and puts a smile on people's faces. Children always enjoy the sight of a bus conductor turning a handle on a little machine and a paper ticket appearing. The sight, sounds, and even the smell is evocative of another era when all of us were younger. For most of us, that nostalgia is enjoyable. There were recent good news that one of the FOCAB's buses, damaged last year in a fire at a garage near Andover, will be able to be restored, although not in time for this event. So, if you want a nice afternoon and to move around the world at the relaxing pace of a 1950s or 60s bus, then head down to the Broadway on the Bank Holiday Monday.
Now we have items of general news, starting with one read by Heather.
Mum's joy when she truly met her son, aged 23, for the first time. A mum has described how she truly met her 23-year-old, non-speaking, autistic son for the first time when he began to communicate. And she spoke of her pride as he is now inspiring others to transform their own lives. Last year, my son had a body riddled with anxiety. He hit his head on a regular basis, explained Joanne Watson. Who could have imagined that he would now be inspiring the lives of non-speakers and their families to use the same communication method that has transformed his and our lives? Tom was born in 1999 and diagnosed with autism and severe language delay at a very early age. Joanne from Compton in Winchester said, "Throughout his life, we've tried many different approaches and interventions to help him, and despite our best efforts, as Tom approached his 22nd year, he was still unable to speak more than a few words and phrases to get his basic needs and wants across. Tom had just moved into supported living when Joanne came across a book called Underestimated, written by an American dad in conjunction with his non-speaking autistic son, Jamie. The book referred to a program called Spelling to Communicate, S2C. That's the letters S and C with a number 2 between them, Spelling to Communicate. Joanne explained the book was captivating because they'd found a way to allow their son to communicate by using a series of increasingly complex letter boards. This wasn't just communication of needs and wants. This was communication of thoughts, feelings and opinions way beyond anything we had thought possible. And their story was so like ours that we simply had to give this process a try. With no S2C practitioners in the United Kingdom, Joanne had several online meetings with the founder of S2C, Elizabeth Vossler, and a programme for Tom was developed. After more than 12 months using S2C and without the progress Joanne had been hoping for, Elizabeth came to London and worked with Tom face to face. March the 31st, 2023, will forever be a significant day in the lives of our family, Joanne said. Elizabeth embarked on a lesson which involved reading a paragraph at a time and then asking some questions on the material. She spoke normally, with no real pauses other than to spell out more complex key words. Tom sat there, making a noise, looking around and giving absolutely no visible indication that he was listening to the material at all. Elizabeth finished the first section and then asked Tom to spell some of the words she'd read. To our surprise, he did this without any significant prompting or support. and despite a degree of physical dysregulation, maintained his focus on spelling out the letters, using a pencil to poke each letter on a plastic stencil of the alphabet. The second day was even more miraculous, as Tom told Elizabeth that uncontrollable noise making others scared of me is one of the hardest things I deal with, which gave us a heartbreaking insight into his world. He finished the day on a high, writing a letter to other spellers. "Dear spellers, I live with terrible anxiety. I get you. I make noises and have tics. Destined to be different, not less. Let's embrace ourselves and choose to be happy. Solidarity, Tom." We left London that day, having truly met our son for the first time and knowing that our lives would never be the same again. There is a lot of skill and practice required to become an effective communication partner, but from that point forwards, we were absolutely certain we would get there. It was only a matter of time. In the subsequent 12 months, Tom has made exceptional progress and is now starting to reap the benefits of many hours of practice and dedication. He is now learning to use a keyboard and iPad to express his thoughts and feelings. This process has been transformative for Tom and our entire family. Joanne is now training to become an S2C practitioner herself. She and 9 others will become the UK's first practitioners. A second wave of people from the UK has also embarked on the training course, and Joanne said, "We hope to make this an ongoing and growing process to serve the needs of a community spanning autism, Down syndrome, Angelman's, cerebral palsy, and other disabilities where individuals struggle to speak." In support of this goal, 3 of Tom's family members in Stevenage, Rob, Rosa and Scott, are cycling from Land's End to John O'Groats to raise money to help provide S2C training bursaries in the United Kingdom. Using his keyboard, Tom said, "I am so moved by everyone's donations to our cause so far and hope that we can get to our target. Thank you all for your generosity. And please continue to spread the word." And there is a crowdfunding appeal.
Jake gets on his bike to raise hundreds for charity. An Itchen Abas schoolboy has put his love of cycling to good use to raise money for an animal charity. Jake Curtin, aged 9, is an avid cyclist and decided to use his passion to ride 100 miles for Dogs Trust. Jake had originally challenged himself to ride 100 kilometres during the month to raise £100, but after managing to achieve the distance just halfway through March, he extended the challenge to 100 miles all the way, raising £415. Jake rode in all weathers and on many of the Itchen Valley's roads and trails, with his sister Emily joining him for several rides. He also spent an afternoon cycling more than 40 kilometres on the famous Goodwood Motor Racing Circuit. Jake said, "I chose to raise money for Dogs Trust because they are my favourite charity, and it's where my grandma and granddad's dog Frank came from." And there's a lovely photograph of here of Jake Curtin holding up his bicycle and smiling at the camera. And I'm pleased to see that he is wearing a cycling helmet.
And here we have a sad article, I'm afraid. Very strange loss as falcon eats her eggs. Winchester Cathedral's resident peregrine falcon has eaten her eggs. Viewers of the peregrine cameras on the cathedral website watched on the morning of Tuesday, April 30th, as Mel ate her final 2 eggs. The incubation had appeared to have been going wrong for several days. The eggs had fallen or been scattered off the nesting tray and were replaced on Monday, April the 29th. They would probably have got cold and the embryos may have died. A local peregrine expert said the eating of the eggs was very strange. Keith Betton, chair of the Hampshire Ornithological Society, said it was unlikely that she would lay more eggs this year. He said, during the night, but probably early morning this morning, one of the eggs was eaten, and she then ate the second egg, although, interestingly enough, she is sitting on the tray at the moment. It is a very clear sign of one of two things. She is either very distressed, and this is what they do sometimes when they are distressed. They make the decision to eat the nutrients in the egg rather than lose it. Or what they sometimes do is decide, I don't need all these eggs, I only need a couple. So they eat a couple to leave them with a couple. But if she's eaten them all, that is very strange. I don't think she's going to lay any more now. She's beyond the point where laying eggs is likely to be successful. He continued, if she really has eaten both eggs, then I think it's a very game over this year, and it's a really sad case. We're pretty sure she is a young female, only 2 or 3 years old, probably never nested before, and she's probably going through a lot of learning experiences in this first attempt. Maybe, over time, she will build up knowledge and understanding and become a more successful parent. The eggs were laid early in April. Mel is believed to have killed the cathedral's previous falcon, Winnie, and usurped her partner, William. Winnie had nested on the cathedral for around a decade. And this is accompanied by two photographs, one of Winnie in 2018, who was killed this year, and it's a beautiful face-on picture of a falcon with her grey and white striped feathers all down the front and yellow feet, staring at the camera, yellow beak and black eyes. And above is the box which has been put on the top of the cathedral for the falcons to nest. And at the bottom of the box there is the one which you may have heard last week had been knocked from the nest and died. And there is Mel eating one of her eggs, standing on the box with her yellow feet and her grey back and stripes all down the front. And a very sad photograph that we don't really understand.
Foxes settle into their new home, and there's a picture of two white, furry, ears-pricked, bright-eyed foxes. They're clearly in a cage, but there's lots of greenery in there with them. Two Corsac foxes have joined the team at Sparsholt College and University Centre in Sparsholt. Laszlo and Nandor, the two new arrivals from Hamerton Zoological Park, are making themselves at home in their new environment. They can be found nestled among the logs in the enclosure opposite Sparsholt's red panda habitat. A spokesperson said, well, while they're not yet on student display, they're gradually getting accustomed to their surroundings, building confidence around people. Laszlo initially showed more boldness, but Nandor is quickly catching up as they engage in trust-building activities like tong feeding. In the coming weeks, the Sparsholt team are excited to start introducing Laszlo and Nandor to student groups. This will provide an excellent opportunity for students to participate in their care, learn about their behaviour, and contribute to our ongoing efforts in animal husbandry we run courses in. Native to Northern and Central Asia, the Corsac fox is known for its adaptability and intelligence. As opportunistic omnivores, they have a varied diet that includes meat, eggs, insects, and root vegetables.
Festival's passion for reading. The Winchester Books Festival, which took place from April the 19th to the 21st, was a tremendous success with 21 different events taking place over 3 days. From criminology to architecture, the festival covered a greater than ever range of different topics in the numerous talks, and was delighted to receive commended authors such as Lauren Child, Frank Gardner, Liz Earle, and more. and participation levels were impressively high, with crowds of people flocking to listen to what the authors had to say about their books. The Winchester Books Festival was founded by Sophie Liardet, Sean Searles and Louisa Symington, who wanted to share their passion for reading with the rest of Winchester. The three friends felt it was important to rehabilitate the love for reading that is so deeply entwined with the city. With the help of sponsors such as the University of Winchester, P&G Wells, the Parish of St Peter's, the Winchester Martyrs and more, the festival was able to supply a terrific representation of how passionate Winchester really is about reading. One excellent example of the success was Liz Earle's talk on her new book, A Better Second Half, which is being released this week. The talk took place in the Theatre Royal and was an immense success. Both Liz Earle and Rebecca Fletcher, the experienced freelance writer and resident host who interviewed her, were able to maintain a convivial yet witty and sharp ambiance. The talk smoothly switched between different topics that Liz Earle goes over in her new book, such as food, biohacking, and mental health. Rebecca Fletcher, who also interviewed other notable figures in the festival, such as Frank Gardner, was pleased with the festival's result. "It went really well," she said. "There was a nice mix of books this year."
And here we have Black Mafia Motorcycle Club rides into the city. Members of a veteran motorcycle club thundered into Winchester to visit their former ancestral home, as well as old friends and associates. Around 30 members of the Black Mafia Motorcycle Club, all Royal Green Jackets veterans, rode into Winchester to visit their former home at Peninsula Barracks, where they had lunch and met old friends. The barracks was the base for the regiment until 1985. After spending a couple of hours at the barracks on Saturday, April the 13th, the group then went on to visit residents in Green Jacket Close in Stanmore, spending time and reminiscing before taking one of the veterans and a widow out for a ride on one of the motorbikes. The group managed to raise £500, which was donated to one of the group's friend's sisters, who is fundraising ahead of taking on the Three Peaks Challenge this July. The club regularly ride out all over the country and will be attending the 80th D-Day commemorations in Normandy. And this is accompanied by three very lively pictures, one of a group of the men sitting round in their black jackets and nowadays blue jeans, but with their military hats on their heads up at the top of the hill. One is with what I presume is the lady who is being ridden around on one of the motorbikes, and another of the whole group of them sitting round in Green Jackets Close, with some in wheelchairs now, and the very noisy motorbikes all around them, but beaming at the memories of life they had before.
Airport hailed as being stress-free. Travellers can now take an EasyJet flight from Southampton without the stress of a London airport, with the operator set to bring more choice for holidaymakers this summer. Southampton airport bosses have said that the airport will aim to compete against London airports for people living in and around Southampton. Aviation director Chris Tibbett told the Chronicle that this summer, travellers will be able to take holiday flights to even more destinations in Spain, France and Portugal without the stress of travelling to and flying from London airports. Southampton Airport has a catchment size similar to large regional airports like Bristol and Edinburgh, but until recently the focus has been on domestic flights. Chris said, "In a very short time, EasyJet has developed 6 domestic and international routes from Southampton, and we want to see this increase. Our key message to airlines is that you can better serve local people and meet local demand, providing a more relaxing start to their holiday by flying from Southampton. My team is in constant discussions with multiple airlines, but establishing a route is an expensive process and takes time. In addition to existing holiday flights from British Airways and TUI, EasyJet have announced that from this summer, this airline will be whisking holidaymakers to Palma, the Algarve and Alicante, while French carrier Chalair has announced the UK's only flight to Cannes in Normandy. Chris continued, Southampton Airport prides itself on being a low-stress environment. It is only 99 steps to walk from the train to the terminal, and we are right next to the M27 motorway, providing great connectivity across Hampshire. The car park's directly opposite the terminal. Walk times are short, making the travel experience far less stressful for people. Chris added that the airport has a range of facilities, including a revamped olive tree bar, a large Costa coffee with runway views, and duty-free shopping.
Choirs on song for a great night. Two choirs will join forces for an evening of music at the Theatre Royal Winchester. The performance, entitled On With The Show, will feature encore choirs and the University of Winchester's show choir. A wide range of music will be performed, from pop to rock, musical theatre, classical music and more. Encore Choirs is a musical community with members from around the area. Meanwhile, Show Choir is based at the University of Winchester and is co-led by a team of students who are learning the art of directing and organising a choir. Both choirs are led by vocal coach Josh Robinson. On With The Show will take place at the Theatre Royal Winchester on Sunday, May the 19th, starting at 5 p.m, and tickets are currently available to buy on the Theatre Royal website. And so for those who don't use that sort of thing, one can visit there and buy them in reception.
And here we have Irina the Snow Leopard treated for arthritis. A snow leopard at Marwell Zoo has been diagnosed with arthritis. The zoo's carnivore team noticed that Irina, a 15-year-old snow leopard, was experiencing difficulties grooming herself properly. A veterinary team was brought in to give her a full checkup, finding matted areas of fur at the base of Irina's tail, which she was unable to clean due to joint pain caused by arthritis. During her geriatric checkup, her limbs were assessed, confirming the presence of arthritis in both hind legs and both wrists. Although not yet at a serious stage, the condition needs to be checked regularly to manage discomfort. Additionally, the veterinary team conducted a heart check, including a heart scan or echocardiogram, as she had a low-grade heart murmur. They diagnosed Irina with age-related mitral valve disease, a condition caused by the valve between the heart chambers failing to close properly. The condition is not severe and is not currently causing the snow leopard any problems. Regular welfare monitoring and increased pain relief have been incorporated into her updated treatment plan, resulting in significant improvements. Danny Free, an animal behaviourist, said, "We have adapted our animal welfare assessment tool to include specific factors that could be age-related, for example, assessing coat condition and signs of lameness. This will allow us to better track how her welfare changes over time so that we can intervene with veterinary care if there are any signs of deterioration. Further examination through X-rays revealed the presence of small bone fragments in Irina's knees, known as joint mice, which are common in animals that have developed arthritis. With the implementation of the enhanced treatment plan, Irina's joint pain has reduced, allowing her to groom herself properly once again." Dr. Elise Summerfield-Smith, zoo veterinarian, said, "The matted areas of fur were previously inaccessible due to discomfort has now disappeared, so we know she's now able to clean herself properly again and reach the areas that were causing her problems. As an organisation, Marwell recognises the importance of providing additional care and attention to more senior animals to ensure their continued well-being and quality of life is maintained. Snow leopards are currently listed as vulnerable on the International Union for the Conservation of Nature Red List, so Irina has played a role in the conservation of her species. During her lifetime, she has given birth to 6 cubs. In turn, they have had 15 cubs of their own, one of which also has a cub. And this is, of course, accompanied by a beautiful photograph of Irina, the snow leopard, lounging on a rock, smiling at the camera, and she has a beautiful white, creamy, furry coat dotted with brown and black spots, and it is a really charming photograph.
Caravan site appeal decision stinks. Villagers say they will have to get used to living near a contentious caravan site that will now officially be for the use of gypsies and travellers. The owners of Carousel Park off Basingstoke Road, Micheldever, have won an appeal against enforcement action from Winchester City Council. The use of the site has been a bone of contention for 20 years. It was used originally as winter quarters for travelling people, so this recent decision has made a big difference. Micheldever Parish Assembly recently heard villagers' concerns about the current use of the site. Reacting to the appeal decision, which was published on April the 8th, local resident Charlie Goodall said, "I think the whole thing stinks. The police have been left to pick up the pieces. All we can do is report any problems to the police. The police and crime commissioner promised to put CCTV in at the site, but that hasn't happened. Blackwood is a site of importance. It's important that people contact the police if there are any issues. It's a problem we have to live with now." The appellants for the appeal are listed as Freddie Loveridge, Anthony O'Donnell, Patrick Flynn, Hughie Stokes, Danny Carter, Patrick Stokes and Oliver Crumlish. As a result of the appeal, the site can now have no more than 24 pitches, including a maximum of 89 caravans. Inspector R. Merritt's decision report said the site was granted permission as a site for 9 pitches for travelling show people in 2003. The report said, "I acknowledged there is a significant need for travelling show people's site provision within the district. However, it seems to me that the council's undisputable, sizeable and immediate, unmet and growing need for gypsy and traveller pitches, as manifested in the lack of available alternative sites and the lack of a 5-year land supply, is so acute and pressing that it surpasses in importance the needs of the former." Speaking at the parish assembly on April the 17th, Councillor Jackie Porter said, "Well, the inspector decided that the site would be regularised rather than closed or changed. At all times, Winchester has taken enforcement action at the site very closely. We have been having meetings about this on a regular basis. And the important thing is that there is a very clear set of conditions. I think the conditions are rigorous. We want to work with the people at the site. It's about regular inspections." And there's a photograph of a great stretch of a sort of clearly used barren land surrounded by trees.
Driver 19 died after car hit tree. A Sparsholt college student who would help anyone at the drop of a hat died after his car crashed into a tree, an inquest heard. George Dillon of Rumsey Road, Hour, died on May the 20th last year at Southampton General Hospital. Mr. Dillon, 19, was driving on Lee Lane on May the 18th after seeing friends at the Olive Tree in Rumsey. After this, the group was heading to a friend's house in Southampton. When driving a Volkswagen Golf, which he had just got 3 weeks before, Mr. Dillon came to an unusual crest in the road. The inquest heard the car bottomed out causing Mr. Dillon to lose control and crash into a tree. He later died in hospital. Five of Mr. Dillon's friends attended the inquest at Winchester Coroner's Court on April the 24th to support his family. Mr. Dillon's father, Darren Dillon, said he was an impeccable boy. He worked and studied hard. He had just completed 4 years at Sparsholt College to be an agricultural engineer. He was happy to go to the pub with his friends, drink Coke and drive them home. He was a very caring person and would help anyone at the drop of a hat. A toxicology report found no evidence of alcohol or drugs in Mr. Dillon's body, and his family told the inquest that he didn't drink alcohol. The cause of death was given as a traumatic brain injury due to a road traffic collision. Assistant Coroner Henry Charles issued a prevention of future death report over the condition of the road and the handling of the automatic call to emergency services from Mr. Dillon's mobile phone. The technology detects when a crash has happened and automatically alerts emergency services. However, Mr. Dillon's family raised concerns about how the call was handled. The police log showed a call had been received at 10:26 p.m., but Darren Dillon said the impact message was sent from his home to 112 at 10:16 p.m. Daniel Whittington, Hampshire Police Control Room Controller, told the inquest that the technology is new and that in most cases the alerts don't come from serious incidents. Angela Dillon, Mr. Dillon's mother, said, "We're trying to figure out why nobody was dispatched immediately when someone could have been unconscious." Mr. Whittington said, "The information given from the automatic alert is not accurate enough to send an officer straight away." Mr. Charles gave the cause of death as a road traffic collision, and he offered his condolences to Mr. Dillon's family and friends.
And now 16th century pub has major refurbishment. A 16th century Hampshire country pub has been restored to its former glory and has reopened with a village shop and English sparkling wine from the neighbouring vineyard. The Chestnut Horse in Easton has undergone an extensive refurbishment after being acquired by the Avington Estate. What is described as a significant investment has been made in its future. The refurbishment has aimed to retain the character of the historic building while adding modern comforts, including a lovely outdoor terrace and beautiful rooms. For generations, the Chestnut Horse has been a beloved fixture in the idyllic village of Easton, on the banks of the River Itchen, just 3 miles from Winchester, offering a place for locals and visitors to meet, to dine and celebrate. Head chef Joe Hibbard has curated a locally sourced menu, offering a range of small plates, pub classics, sharing boards and signature dishes, all made with locally sourced produce and in an effort to support local growers. Enjoy everything from Avington smoked trout to seafood stew and from sausage and mash to steak and chips. The pub also boasts an extensive selection of local ales, ciders, spirits and wines, including an English sparkling wine from the pub's neighbouring vineyard, The Grange, plus an impressive array of cocktails. The new village shop and deli provides a welcome addition too, offering everyday grocery goods and fresh takeaway items, whether you're in need of pantry essentials or searching for that special treat. The Chestnut Horse's new bedrooms have been restored with every attention to detail, drawing on inspiration from their history, but with modern comforts, offering guests a relaxed yet refined stay. A versatile private dining area is perfect for intimate family gatherings or special events with friends, and there's a special club for neighbours called Valley Locals. The pub is part of the wider Avington Estate, with a beautiful stately home on the banks of the River Itchen alongside Avington Lakes, a unique collection of self-catered properties centred around the historic and active fishery. the working family estate has acres of woodland and lakes to explore. And this is accompanied by two photos, one of the chef, Joe Hibbard, sitting with his apron on and beaming underneath a very old stable door, sitting on a bench and smiling at a young lad sitting on the bench next to him. And the other is inside the chestnut horse, which looks wonderfully warm and welcoming, a huge oak beam over the fireplace and a log-burning stove in there, warming up the bench and table and chair sitting round it with a game of chess set up on the little table.
Vintage Fleet to Return by Kimberly Barber. And there's a picture of, one, two, three, four, five variously antique buses with a whole crowd of proud people who are involved in keeping them on the road in front of them. More than 40 buses and coaches, representing almost 100 years of history, will be providing free rides over a wide range of routes from Winchester Broadway on this 1st May bank holiday. Organised, I think it's tomorrow, actually. Organised by the Friends of King Alfred Buses, FOCAB, the day on May the 6th will see a fleet ranging in age from the 95-year-old Leyland Lion that joined the Friends fleet last year to an Optare XL built as recently as 2002. Routes radiate out from the Broadway, covering destinations in the city such as Stanmore, Oliver's Battery, Week, Harestock, Springvale and Winnell, while the longer trips will take people out to Hursley, Otterbourne, Twyford and Colden Common, Oslebury, Alsford, Mitchell-Dever, East Stratton, Sutton Scotney, Crawley, King's Somborne, Stockbridge and Sparsholt. Journeys are all free and open to all, with children under 16 needing to be accompanied. There is an open top service to and from the Science Centre at Mourne Hill, running every 20 minutes, as well as a display of old buses at St Catherine's Park and Ride, with a frequent shuttle service to connect to and from the Broadway. In addition, there's a half-hourly service to the Twyford Waterworks, which is steaming on that day. As is customary, a sumptuous programme, produced for FOCAB by a design agency, Best Impressions, has been published and will be available on the day. It sells for £15 a copy, but the sales help to defray the enormous cost of laying the day on, supporting the enormous volunteer effort that makes it all happen. The programme provides full details of the timetables with maps, lists of departures and background information on all the vehicles taking part. And as an added bonus, each holder of a souvenir programme is being offered one free entry to the Twyford Waterworks. This year, for the first time, a quick guide will be available at just £5. Basic details of departures and a summary of arrangements is in it. James Freeman, FOCAB's chair, said, "We are looking forward to welcoming everybody aboard the buses, whether local people or from far and wide."
WI members celebrate Branch's 100th birthday. Littleton and Harestock Women's Institute members recently celebrated their group's 100th birthday with a centenary lunch. The event at Littleton Memorial Hall was attended by the Mayor of Winchester, Angela Clear, the past chairman of the Hampshire Federation of Women's Institutes, and two Hampshire advisers. A centenary cake was baked and decorated by two of the WI members and then cut by the Mayor. After the lunch, the Winchester a cappella singers provided lively entertainment, rounding off what was described as a very special occasion. And there's a photograph here, which won't surprise you, of lots and lots of these ladies sitting round tables and having a really terrific time.
And celebrating female talent, the Maven Awards. The Theatre Royal Winchester hosted a special event celebrating female entrepreneurial talent across the city. The Maven Awards held its inaugural event at the theatre on Thursday, April 25th, giving out 10 awards to highlight women in business. Guests celebrated the winners and enjoyed a line-up of female-led entertainment. Performances included X Factor finalist Rachel Chambers performing Proud Mary, Respect and We Are Family, and Molly Amour and Kate performing The Way You Look Tonight. Leg Up Dance and Winchester Theatre Arts also made appearances. The Maven Awards is the creation of Natalie Hamer, founder of Maven Co-working Winchester, a female boutique-style co-working space in the heart of the city. She said, "My mission through Maven is to offer local female entrepreneurs a workspace where they can feel supported, meet like-minded individuals, have access to a range of business training, and make genuine connections and collaborations. Co-working is way more than just a desk. We're a community." The Maven Awards was an idea I had last year. I feel passionate about the wealth of female business talent we have here in Winchester and wanted to find a fun and uplifting way to highlight it. The Theatre Royal Winchester was the perfect venue. And this is accompanied by several photos, including Maven, the eco-warrior Maven Joe Burgess of Green Magpie, and all standing in front of presumably a fake beautiful cherry tree, and they're wearing their very glamorous evening dresses and carrying a flamingo head, which must be the award which they've been given, a pink flamingo head.
Very special lady marks her 103rd birthday. A very special lady recently celebrated her 103rd birthday at a Winchester care home. Irish Humphrey had a party at Tegfield House in Chilbolton Avenue on April the 23rd. Singer Sarah Hobbs serenaded the care home's residents with songs by ABBA and Elvis Presley, and it was followed by a lunch with a cake. And it's a very nice cake. Anne Broomhead, Iris's niece, travelled from Uckfield in East Sussex to celebrate the occasion. She said, "Her husband was my uncle. They had no children. Her husband Rex used to be at Mitchell Dever doing agricultural work, and they lived at Irridge and worked for the Marquis of Abergavenny after the war. Her husband was in the Sussex Regiment, and my auntie was in the ATS. They moved to the Winchester area about 50 years ago and bought a bungalow in Oliver's Battery. Sadly, Rex died when he was 61, so Iris has been on her own for a very long time. She didn't work. She loved her house and garden, took to country life, but I don't think she was very keen on cows, though. I don't know the secret to her long life. She's just amazing. She's a very special lady." And there's a picture of Iris with a few friends and a host of balloons holding that very beautiful cake. "I don't know the secret to her long life. Sorry. Iris moved into Tegfield House when she was 90, and the staff said she was the oldest resident they'd ever had. Gemma Forbes, activities coordinator, said the home currently had a new extension under construction. We'll have 15 extra ensuite bedrooms, and it's planned to finish by the end of the year."
And that's all we have for you this week. Please return the memory stick in the plastic wallet as soon as you've finished with it. Thanks to this week's editors and to all the other volunteers who prepare, copy and dispatch our free recordings to you. Goodbye from us, Heather.
Bye-bye.
John.
Goodbye.
Jane.
Goodbye.
And me, Noel Thorpe-Tracy. I hope this year's summer will finally arrive. Goodbye.